Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The C.J. McCollum Show, where every week, New Orleans Pelicans star C.J. McCollum discusses names and storylines in and around the NBA with inside perspective you can only get from someone in the locker room and on the floor. That's The C.J. McCollum Show. Listen where you are listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Happy New Year to everybody. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live from H-Town. Check him out at Slate. You know, Joel Anderson. What's going on?
What's up? I'm literally this weekend. I'm Joel from Missouri City. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So yeah. All right. Just get it right. Get it right. Not Houston, right. Missouri City. I know there's some people on the north side.
Yeah. Ain't nobody talking to you about that. Look, I don't know if people can see Joel's shirt right now. It says frogs, but I just want to let you know we'll be talking about TCU a little later. So like, don't get on your bullshit early. We have important things to actually talk about.
I know how to behave in front of company,
man. Actually, no, you don't. Because I told you before we got on, we're going to start with the serious stuff before you get on your bullshit. And then you immediately started opening it up like you were Superman, like we can't already see your shirt.
You pointed it out. And this is also, I think of this as an audio medium, you know? So
everybody didn't have to see that. Yeah, I understand. Anyway, I wanted to ask you this because you play college football. In fact, one of your college roommates has worked with the NFL Players Association for a while. So the DeMar Hamlin situation, for former players, for NFL players in particular, they looked so weary on television on Tuesday. Like they had been up all night, like it had happened to them. Like I found myself being a little bit tired, but I had a flight and all this stuff, and I was watching that. Like it wasn't personal to me, but man, did you notice that from talking to guys, who played at your level and higher, that it hit in a much different way this time than I think we've ever seen in one of these moments.
I think you saw in that moment the idea of the NFL being a fraternity, or the people that even play the game at a certain level as a fraternity. Because, I mean, for all the violence that we inflict on each other in that game, I mean, one of the fundamental things that we do at the start of every game, if we're praying, or even if we're just talking with our teammates and coaches before a game, we say, we pray or we hope that everybody gets out of this game safely. Like that is just the fundamental thing, like beyond the scoreboard, anything else, you just want to get out of there intact. And for whenever something like that happens, it just really brings to mind like the fragility of the human body, man. Like that's the thing I just think about. It's like, it doesn't take much for something really bad to happen to a human body, man. And the DeMar Hamlin's thing, it just like anybody can sort of relate to that. It didn't look like a hard hit. It didn't look like anything traumatic had happened. Like sometimes you can look at a hit and see something bad happen, but I think everybody can just sort of look at that scene and say, that could have very easily been me. Or that could have been somebody I care about out there. And that's really moving. And I mean, I was watching the game with my wife, kind of, my attention was split. It was just on the game. And then I saw all these people crying, like in the moment. And my wife in particular was moved. She said, do they normally do this? Do they normally cry like this and show emotion? Because I'm really moved by that. And I was like, you know what? For all the catastrophic injuries we've seen in football in the course of our lives, I can't remember seeing people affected like that in the moment. Can you? Their response made me think that the worst had happened.
Right. The closest I can think of is, look at Lawrence Taylor immediately after he nearly killed Joe Theismann, right? Like that's the one, oh my God, look what I did. That wasn't this though, what I mean? Like, I think, and people who know me know this about me. When you start talking about the horrific, catastrophic injuries of the last 15 years, I'm not the person for you to talk to about it. If I don't see it as it happens, I'm not going back to watch it. I don't really see the purpose. Like Gordon Hayward, I was watching that game and I remember him being on the ground and I was like, hey, no need to look at that anymore. right? Dak Prescott, I was like in a similar place where it's like, I don't do that.
I never saw the Kevin Ware from Louisville.
No, never saw it. Like I didn't see it live, so there was no need for me to follow up. So on this one, I saw that they had, you know, they were around a dude. He was injured. I wasn't paying attention. And then once they showed a replay, I'm like, okay, I'm not really in on this. So I even now, I haven't seen the hit. I didn't see the thing with him up and down. And so they go to break and then they come back and they're still around him. And, you know, I'm starting to see the press circles get going. And so I'm thinking in this moment that this is something head injury or spinal, right? Like, like this is, you know, something to the nervous system. That's normally where we are when we get to this place. And then they go to break again, and then they come back, and Joe Buck is like, there's really nothing to say. And I'm like, whoa, I've never heard that one before. Then they go away another time, like I can't keep track of it all. And then Joe Buck comes back and says that they had been administering CPR, and I had never heard that before.
That, like, that was what got me.
Yeah, that was the point where they're talking about they're administering CPR, but they were still all down there, and then they went back to the studio, and they got Susie Colbert and Adam Schefter and Booger McFarland, and bless their hearts, man. Like this ain't the same thing as it's a first round knockout when we got a long time before the main event starts, right? Like how are you feeling that time? And you could tell they were scrambling trying to figure this out. Like I can't imagine as somebody who has worked in television but doesn't really do live television. I can't imagine what the chaos was that they were dealing with. And I'm looking at Schefter, and again, I still don't really have any idea like what kind of injury or what kind of situation we're talking about. They said the dude stood up 3 seconds, then fell out. And right after Buck started talking about the CPR and everything, I got on the phone and I called Dominique and I said, did we just watch somebody die? Because I felt like I was overreacting. You know what I mean? Like I didn't want to be dramatic, but they can't say we think we just watched somebody die. I'm like, I think we just watched somebody die. And I called Dominique. I was like, did we just watch somebody die? And he's like, yeah, I think so. And so they're doing all the stuff on the field. All we know is that everybody's crowded around. They showing that shot of Josh Allen. And I've never seen anybody look like that at a professional sporting event.
You see that after like a car accident, a really bad car accident. You see somebody like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, and that's, I'm thinking again that he saw somebody die in front of him. Those are the faces that I've seen that circumstance before. So
So he's staring off into space. I'm now like talking to people. We're on the phone, you know, just people I know in, you know, in industry stuff. And it's wild because anybody that would be anything close to the situation, and by close, I mean like administratively close, not necessarily like somebody on the Buffalo Bills or whatever. You can't even call them because clearly they're a little bit busy right now.
Right.
You know, like we can't get any of this. It was just so wild, like as it goes. And then the ambulance comes in, right? Which again is like what happens with spinal stuff, but it took him a while to get that boy in that ambulance. And that was when I went cold.
That's when we texted about that. I was like, it's only ever been, at least in my experience, bad news when the ambulance is moving with no urgency.
Yes.
And it was just it's not casual, but it just seemed they were moving very slowly. Remember the sirens weren't on? And we were like, that tends to be the worst news.
Yeah.
We just had to infer a lot of things in the absence of actual information. And I mean, how do you talk about that? I mean, again, if Joe Buck has nothing to say, there probably isn't that much to say about what's happening in the.
No, well, you know, the ambulance thing and like the inferences that we were making or that we, I guess, kind of had to make at that point, and not because anybody was doing anything wrong, but just like it's just where we were. I know somebody who works at a place, right? We're just going to call it a place.
Okay.
And it's the kind of place where ambulances got to pull up fairly often. But the thing they say about that is, no matter what happens, no matter what the circumstance is, there are sirens on the way there and there are sirens on the way back. Mm-hmm. Because no matter what, at least in the way that people see it, ain't nobody die at the place.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Right. They get declared wherever.
The hospital. Yeah. But it ain't,
Right.
We are comporting ourselves as though a person is alive at right. the place.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
They didn't do that.
Right.
And that got me, right? And that is, I guess, in part, my cynical mind operating and just being like, hey, man, I would think that the NFL would absolutely want to make sure, and that's probably me not being fair to them, but I don't mm-hmm. think I'm being unfair to the larger macro environment that we live in, but it made me extra nervous when mm-hmm. there weren't, like, the fact that we are recording this right now at 10:20 Eastern time on Wednesday, January 3rd, and DeMar Hamlin is still alive. I did not think he left that stadium alive.
Oh, I mean, me either. I mean, they said they stopped the ambulance, let the family in too, or his mother. And I'm like, that sounds like the actual worst case scenario right there. And yet, whenever I go back to Twitter or wherever I'm getting my information, and I read about DeMar Hamlin now, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe we're here. You know, this is not necessarily analogous, but maybe you'll understand. When the O.J. chase happened, I remember thinking, we're going to see O.J. Simpson kill himself on TV.
Yes.
Right? And the fact that he didn't, I was like, wow, like, we really were spared. So it felt like that sort of urgency to me. I was like, we watched somebody die. And then the fact that he didn't die, I'm like, oh, wow, how do we move on from here?
Right. And nobody had an answer for that. Like, I remember as I was watching it, and when they snapped, and they showed Joe Burrow warming up.
Yeah.
And I was about to tweet, they really about to play some football. Right? Like, they really about to play football. I was just going to say just that. They're really about to play football. Yeah. And just leave it there. And then I looked at it, and I saw them coaches come to midfield. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, it ain't about to be no football. and the thing is, no matter what the NFL said or the NFL did or did not tell them or anything else, no matter what it was, it wasn't going to be no game because the players weren't about to play.
Right.
And I don't even necessarily have, like, super harsh judgment for the NFL if their immediate thought was, we going to play. Like, I know this will sound trivial, but this is the truth. Somebody get shot at Waffle House, they're going to get that body out. They're going
to
clean
up. You told me not to be a fool. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're going to clean up, and then they're going to serve some waffles. You know what I'm saying? Like Waffle House, like, legendarily, they measure like, how bad a storm is by whether or not Waffle House is closed.
Right, absolutely.
This is like, legitimately, like, a scientific measure, right? Like, because Waffle House don't close, period. Right. The NFL does not stop, period. They have nothing in their manual for what if somebody dies out here, or what if it looks like somebody dies out here. There's no, like, clear, this is what we're going to do here sort of thing. And so everybody fell into what they've done their whole lives. Next man up.
Right. Well, and see, I'm not inclined to side with the NFL in any issue related to player safety, player health. But I think that what was going on in that moment is that the playbook is, we get started in 5 minutes. We give the players 5 minutes after every sort of circumstance like this, after Reggie Brown, after Mike Utley, after Kevin Everett. Like, those were terrible, terrible incidents that looked really, really bad. And they kept playing those games. And so I'm thinking that machinery got into motion.
Yeah.
And as that's happening, people are like, oh, no, hold on. You know, and it takes a while to communicate that and bring everybody together. And I think I don't think the NFL ever seriously considered putting those players back out on the field.
Right. Well, this is what I think. It all depends on what you mean by the NFL, right? Right.
Right.
Like there is not a person named Norman Frederick Lawson, right? It all depends on what you mean by the NFL. No, there was absolutely somebody that was like, damn, guess we about to play some ball, right? There was somebody that was like that because there were players on the field, not all of them, obviously, who snapped into, all right, time to go. Joe Burrow was warming up. Stephon Diggs was trying to rally the troops, even though Stephon Diggs was clearly not in a position to play, right? They were doing what they do. And so what I don't think happened was, I imagine there was somebody that was like, all right, I guess we go in 5 minutes. Damn, this is messed up. And then somebody who was like, hey, ixnay on the ife in its may, right? But what I don't think there was somebody after that who was like, no, we have sponsors and we are going to go get this money. I don't think, or at the very least, I don't think that person hopped in the group chat, right? That person didn't get on the Slack channel and be like, man, y'all acting like some punks right now. Like,
no, yeah, like, next man up. Next
yeah,
man
yeah.
Up.
I don't think that, but I do think that people fell into habits. And so, no, the NFL did not call down and say, you got 5 minutes. Because the NFL didn't have to call down and say, you got 5 minutes. Because everybody knows rain, sleet, yep. snow, hail, we gonna get this mail, right? Like, that's what everybody, yeah. And it took a minute for people, I think, to snap out of it. And I don't, and also let's remember this too. Didn't everybody see what happened?
Yeah.
Right? Not everybody. Think about how long it took us, as we were talking about it, to really do the math and figure out that worst case scenario might have been at play.
Right.
Now, you imagine you watching this from somewhere else.
Yeah, well, you mean like you come in. Well, I guess my thing is that I never actually saw what happened, but I don't feel like you needed to see what happened to know something bad had happened.
But something bad happening is not the metric for whether or not to shut down a football game.
But I think the thing is the reaction of the players, not the incident yeah. itself, but the reaction itself is what made it. So all you had to see to me was Josh Allen's face, the tears running down Stephon Diggs's cheeks. Yes. And I was like, oh, I've never seen that before. And
yes.
I don't think that's like you said, you haven't seen the hit Damar Hamlin against T. Higgins. I don't think I needed to see it because I saw that and I was like, it's going to be hard to get them dudes back out
yeah.
there.
In the oh, yeah. It wasn't going down. like yeah. this was, and it wasn't going down like on a matter of protest, right? It was yeah. just,
I can't do it.
This isn't, yo, can you imagine being Sean McDermott? And let's say they restarted the game.
Yeah.
Trying to give the halftime adjustments.
Oh, man.
Man, he's coming there and be like, hey, man, hey, two more quarters on three.
Yeah,
right? Like,
I'm going to give you, you got 15 minutes. Take the time you need. And yeah. I'll see you on the
yeah.
field.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go in the back. Like, there's nothing. There's absolutely nothing to be said like in a time like this. I'm thinking about this too. If you was the coach that tried to rally them, I don't know if this is intentional, but these don't seem like the Cincinnati Bengals of yore.
Oh, he basically trying to say who's? Oh man,
I'm saying this. Imagine trying to tell Pac-Man Jones he got to get back out there and play some football right
oh,
now.
No. No, Bomani, please help me. What's the name of the guy from Arizona State, the linebacker?
Why perfect.
Yeah, Vontaze yeah.
Perfect.
Tell Vontaze Perfect what he about to do in that circumstance.
Yeah, like them extra emotional dudes, right? Where yeah. it's not like you just think that they rapscallions, but they got hearts. You know yeah, what I'm right. saying? They feel, and they done seen homies die before, right?
The like
they've been down here. Imagine you going in that dude's face, talk about, all right. You know what we got to do. We ain't got to do nothing, bruh.
Right, right. So, Terrence, you might want to feel the hole next time. Like, you know, Humber just, what? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
Nah.
Sean McDermott, there was no moment at which Sean McDermott was about to go in there and tell them dudes what they about to do right
now. I mean, but even that, I mean, I felt like, that is a real improvement. And I don't think, I mean, maybe people want to criticize the NFL, but I think that speaks to a real growth in the game that people understood in that moment that, like, you shouldn't even try to make players play under that circumstance because yeah. there were so many, you go back a generation, I don't think the coaches are going to involve the players as much. I don't think that they're going to, I think that a generation ago, they played that game. And we know enough now to not do that.
So I don't know if they play that game a generation ago. I'm not sure. Okay. I do think they play that game two generations ago.
Okay.
And the reason that I think they play that game two generations ago is one thing we got to remember is it used to be that all them football coaches have fought in a war before.
Mm, that's fair.
Like,
man. Them World cats, War II veterans,
World War II, Korea.
Vietnam.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, those cats had Vietnam, I guess not as much, right? Because I think we started, you know, getting out of that point because people started going to college to get out of it, you know, and it goes. But those cats, I wonder how that mentality goes, because for them, they have actually seen their homies die and kept on doing whatever it was that they was doing. Like, it was no day. War ain't got no days off. You know what I mean? Like, hey, man, we gonna need a mental health day, man.
Yeah,
I don't
PTO.
Know if you saw. Yeah, I don't know if you saw, man, but like five of my partners got taken out by a mine. So I'm gonna need to chill out for a little bit. That ain't really how it worked at that time, you know, but these... I think the coaches, all these, it's a much more bourgeois existence than it used to be. And I think that this idea of stopping down for your mental health, honestly, is something that you can do if you can afford it.
Right.
And that is part of where we are. But I don't think if this had happened 15 years ago, that they would have tried to make them play. I also think that even if they had tried, it just wasn't happening. Because one thing that isn't different, I think the fans would have been affected absolutely the same way. And that was part of why they couldn't do this. Like, all those people in the stadium, could you imagine how surreal it would have been to sit there and, like, keep watching this?
Well, Bill, I was actually wondering about that, and I would love to hear more from the fans there. I was kind of curious, why did they stay after the ambulance had taken them off the field? What do you think they were waiting on?
It's funny you mentioned that. Because I said that on Twitter, and I tried to be as benign as possible in my expression. Sure. Like, I really wasn't offering judgment. I was really saying I am surprised that so many people are still there under the circumstances. And I had people hit me up. I think one guy said that he was at a minor league baseball game when a dude got hit in the head with a line drive. And I don't know if it killed him or not, but like, it really, really took him out. And he said, part of it was kind of just shock. And two, I think he said that some people would conclude that the stadium is the place where you'll get information the fastest. Now, I actually think that that is just an erroneous hypothesis. I think you'll get it faster somewhere else. Cause in the stadium, like, you're going to find on Twitter, whatever they're going to tell you on the stadium. You know what I mean? Like, right. I don't know if that necessarily helps, but it did stop me from going to like a judgmental place. Cause I did kind of think like, y'all ain't hanging out here thinking it's still going to be a football game, because I wouldn't want to watch no more football. But there are reasons that people pointed out to me that I thought made sense for why somebody might still be there that are other than continuing to watch football.
Right. And I guess, you know what, and thinking about it as we're talking about this, I mean, it is like community. Like, they all saw something traumatic. And the same way the players did, those fans saw it too. And there was a community of people there they could talk about it with and kind of share that, like, man, did you see that? What do you think? You know, that sort of thing. So that makes a little bit more sense. I can get it. But I wasn't judging.
No, but I was in the same place as you. Like, it was just kind of like, huh, this is surprising.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let me ask you this, though. Did somebody go talk to Mike Brown, or did Mike Brown go talk to somebody else? Who started the email chain that read, are we giving refunds? ? Just tell them we'll honor these tickets when the game is rescheduled. That game is not, I repeat, not being rescheduled.
Look, I bought concert tickets to a Bell Biv DeVoe concert, for March 2020, and they never gave me my money back, man. So I can't imagine Mike Brown. I can't say, hey man, you know, you blocked the preseason. You probably didn't go to all the preseason games either. So what's the difference?
Mike Brown be like, these are the breaks. Pick it up, pick it up, pick it up. No, he's like, yeah, it's really unfortunate, man. Yeah. Like I suffered trauma too.
Right. He's like, I'm still spending Jeff Blake money, man.
Mike Brown ain't trying to get like somebody has called up to ask for their money back, right? Their tickets, I assure you, were not cheap. Somebody after a while, the shock wore off, and they was like, so what's up with these tickets? Like, I'll never forget this long as I live. I did my last day of the Morning Jones radio show I did on Sirius. It was a very emotional thing, man. I was on the verge of tears on the way out. And on the way in, after that happened, I got a DM from a listener who was like, you send me my t-shirt yet?
He's so funny.
There is always somebody who is able to accept and move on just a little bit too fast, right? And it's not so much that they're moving on, it's that they're moving on to the absolute wrong thing.
Hey man, we all move different. I mean, those people keep the trains moving in a manner of speaking. So
yeah, no, some people, the show go on, right? Like that's how they, and that was, I think that's Look, NFL default. Like the idea that they would keep going if they had done it. When you think about the other things that they've kept going after happening, this just felt different, but it isn't that much different. This is just what they do. And I had to, I really had to stop because it's so easy to bang on the NFL in this moment, right? Like people found the people that they decided that they wanted to bang on is the ones that they would assume. Like the whole thing happening with Skip was just wild to watch.
Hey,
the man apologized. And like, he was not clear. And I always make the argument that as a professional communicator, it's on you. If people don't understand you, I get it. But it went to a whole different place, man. The dude was trying to say, how could we ever think about seeding or anything else like that? But he ain't had no equity. And so people just banged.
People didn't want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I think if you listen to the show every day, I'm inclined to get like, Skip is Skip. But I don't think he meant, I don't think
he
had any
ill intent.
No, not at all. But I will say this, FS1, I mean, if y'all, you know, I'll do it for half.
I don't know which it or which like which chair you're looking for, but neither of them is available to you, brother. Unfortunately, it ain't available to me. It ain't happening. But no, I'm curious to see how this goes, like as we get to the week, because with the injury itself, I hope this doesn't sound trivial, but I think you'll get where I'm coming from here. Like, when I was little and used to watch wrestling, they had the moves were more old school back then, right? And they had this finishing move. I think Big John Studd did it, a couple other people. Oh, I know the previous incarnations of The Undertaker did it. It's called the Heart Punch. And the finishing move was you punch somebody in their heart and then they grab their chest looking like Red Fox and they hit the ground and then 1, 2, 3, tap them out. And I was like, wow, this is an incredibly dramatized, you know, sort of thing. That's what happened to this dude, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
He took a blow to the chest, and that threw off his heart rhythm, and that's what it was. And so what I think had to be terrifying for former players was this is an everyday thing, right? Like, this was kind of, in some ways, analogous to the non-contact injury, and you torn your ACL. Like, absolutely. Dude, I was just walking and then this happened, but this is not that, right? This was something that wasn't even on your bingo card of the worst things that could happen to you while you were playing football. And that, I imagine, had to be wild terrifying.
Well, actually, I mean, I've been talking about this a little bit. That has to go even far beyond the NFL because there are half dozen to a dozen kids a year that die from what DeMar Hamlin died of on middle school and high school fields every year. Like there's a handful of kids that die from the same thing. So this is, I mean, I would have to imagine, and I don't, you know, I don't want to make any predictions. I'm not a person. I'm grappling with the future of the game. But I can't imagine that a lot of people, a lot of parents of young children watched that game last night and said, oh, yeah, I'm going to sign my kid up for that game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't youth participation in football has been declining. I think every year for like the last 15 years or something like that. I would be really curious to know what it's going to look like from this, because this is, I mean, this happens on one of the NFL's most valuable pieces of property, Monday Night Football. Everybody's watching. This is the news. This is a news story my mama was talking about. This is on MSNBC. You had to go on CNN to talk about it. The people that are already sort of being inclined to be scared of what can happen out there, how could you look at your little kid and be like, oh, yeah, sign him up if something like that can happen?
Well, let's be clear about something. Youth football, tackle. Yep. Youth football is indefensible. It cannot be justified. Tackle, right?
It's so fun, Bomani, but you're right. I mean, it's the most fun I've had in football, but yes, people can't do it anymore.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I bet cocaine would be fun too. And you know, and also part of why you had so much fun playing youth football is that was your athletic peak. You know what I'm saying? Like that you was dominating.
I'm not going to even dispute that, but yeah, we were dominant, you know. In the span, I'll just give you a little, in a span of like 10 months, I was the fastest 10-year-old in the country. We went undefeated in football, went 10-0. I think we only allowed 14 points that year. I was a quarterback, in case you want to know. And I was starting point guard for a team and went 8-0 in my little YMCA league, but we ain't got to talk about that, but yeah.
I knew it was all coming. But here's my thing about it. It doesn't necessarily create better football players either. I don't have any evidence that playing football at that young age matters. Like if everybody started playing tackle football in the ninth grade, I don't know how much about like the ultimate outcomes change or anything like that.
I think it's pretty clear, and I think studies have been run on this anyway, that it's, in addition to being morally indefensible for youth football, that basically kids should not play football until they turn 14 years old or older because their brains are not equipped to absorb the punishment they take at that age. So, yeah, I mean, I think about the people that were great in youth football, people like myself, and like, did it matter when I was 20 years old? Nah. I could have picked up football in high school and been okay. So, yeah, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to ask the cliche question because everybody was asking me that the other night. Like, are you going to let Desmond play football? I was like, well, if he wants to play it when he's 14, he can decide what he wants to do. But before that, nah. I mean, also the coaching isn't great. Coaching is hard. It's really hard to find good coaches. Just imagine the pool you're picking from for youth football.
Yo, the thing about youth football coaches, the question about whether or not to let somebody coach youth football comes down to one thing. Do you want to? That's it, right? Like we just, hey, man, I'm just so good that you out here working with these kids because we be giving dudes way too much credit for working with this. But they doing their own cosplay of like, you know, wanting to be that guy and the respect that ultimately comes from it and everything else. But no, like just the more you really go back and think about it, there's just like, what show was that? The show that one of them networks had, the reality show with the youth football.
It was San Antonio. Was it Tykes or something? What was it?
Tykes. The word Tykes was involved. But Tykes, I remember I saw a dude that I played Little League against as one of them coaches. And I remember he was a very good athlete relative to the level that we was all.
You know what
I'm saying? It would stand to reason that he would be the dude at this point. But these kids was out here concussed, laid out on the ground and all of this. And I'm like, nah. This isn't, there's no justification. If you want them out there playing flag or whatever, that there's something to that. Like, I'm not down on like the notion or just the idea of football. Right. I'm down on how hurting it is. It is injurious.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And I think that's the problem. Like, I'm not a person that wants to see football go away, and I'm grappling with that. Like, there are a lot of people that think that that's indefensible, inexcusable, and I'm a brute. And I'll own that if that's what it is. I have not gotten there with football yet. But in terms of like having kids out there, it's too dangerous. And the pool of people that you have to pick from. And look, I was a youth football coach once. I think people that work with kids, they choose and they want to do that. That is great. If that's your ministry, good for you. The pool of people that you got to pick from a lot of the times are not, I mean, either you might not get the football information that you need, or you may not be, they may not be the adult that you necessarily want to have around your kid. That's why I'm just like, let's just end that. Youth sports is hard enough as it is all over the place. Like, what? Just pick it up in high school and you'll be fine.
And they might be better football players if they play soccer as kids. Get them feet right.
Hey, man, let's look, man, do dance, do all these other things. There's so many other ways to get yourself right, get ready for football. You can teach. I'm a person, maybe, you know, a lot of people might disagree with me. You can figure out tackling as you get older. I don't think you need to do that at 12 years old. Anything you learn at 12 years old anyway ain't going to hold up when you're 19 years old.
Well, also, from what I've heard from people watching the USC game, apparently playing all that U football don't make you no better tackler no way.
Hey, man, if I had to tackle Taiji Spears, Tulane, I might struggle too. Because that's a bad boy, man. USC ain't tackled nobody this year, to be honest. So.
Yes.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, so... You know, we dealt with this.
Want to talk about it?
We dealt with the stuff. So now let's let Joel get up on the bullshit. Now I need people to understand. To understand something about Joel and his bullshit. Okay.
Oh man, come on, man.
I just want people to get this, and I get where Joel is coming from. Joel wanted TCU to hire Deion Sanders, which I think could have worked out very well if they had done that. After he wanted them to hire another coach who got a job at another school, but that's neither here nor there.
Wait, what other coach?
You know which one. I'm trying to let you have
dignity
about this.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, but, man, you really, that's a deep pull, bro.
That ain't no deep pull. You said it even. Okay. So they hired Sonny Dykes. Joel didn't want Sonny Dykes. And he's like, I want it. Insert coach here, right? He got into his sociopathic bag.
It was him or Deion. Yeah. It was always him or Deion. Okay.
Two guys who are kind of similar but way different all at the same time. Anyway, and so they got Sonny Dykes. So all year long, Joel down on TCU, ain't gonna be no good because they got Sonny Dykes as the coach.
Had you seen the last four seasons?
Halfway through the season, it reached a point where TCU is, they keep finding ways to win these games. And we on a group chat, me, Joel, and Master Tess Foshin of Prime Video. And me and Master just couldn't stop laughing because Master was like, TCU undefeated, and Joel is furious. So Joel would down talk his squad all game long, and then they'd have one of these ridiculous comebacks. And now Joel out here talking about my frogs and all this stuff.
They always my frogs.
Oh yeah. You ain't say nothing about them being your frogs before that. You would be, yeah, they ain't no good. When we want to talk to you about the fact that they was losing, you ain't have nothing on it. And then they come out on the back end, and now all of a sudden you out here with your chest out, with your little amphibian shirt on, right? I'm gonna keep telling people, I'm a hater, and I think
you've never rooted for a team that was any good, and I understand. You've never rooted for a champion. Okay, Warren. Is it one? Just
okay.
One?
Yeah. Okay. For what it's worth, neither have you. Anyway.
Well, I'm an Astros fan too. You may.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Anyway. Right. My point being, Joel was doing this sleight of hand thing where when they was losing, he was right, but when they won, he was a proud alum. And that is why I have been actively rooting against TCU for weeks now. And I'm not rooting against TCU.
He's not lying.
I'm rooting against you.
No,
and I thought that Kansas State had done the job for us all which would have then had TCU going to play that game that Kansas State had to play, which was this year's version of that Capital One Bowl where Alabama went in there to remind y'all what time it was. Okay, so anyway, I have been rooting against Joel.
TCU and Alabama had a common opponent, real quick, just so you know. TCU and Alabama had a common opponent. They both won, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I don't root for that team, so it doesn't really...
Okay, just want to make sure.
See, Joel...
Who looked more impressive against that team?
No, but this is... Hold on. This is why I've been rooting against you, is this point right here. You refuse to believe that I stopped rooting for Texas. And so when I say I stopped rooting for Texas, I did. There's nothing good that can happen for Texas that I'm going to celebrate because I'm out. And when I'm out, I'm out. Sure. You like to dip out when it's good for you and then show back up for the party, and that's why I'm rooting against you. But anyway, let me get to the good part. Let me get to the good part. So I spent some time in Atlanta during the holidays, and I was seeing them UGA fans walking around.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some dude, he had his two kids that looked like they were like maybe 11 and 9, 10 and 8, something like that.
Yeah.
And they had on their UGA number 34 jerseys. And I was like, oh, but I don't want them to win neither. Like, the thing about Georgia was I've been around Georgia fans for a very long time, but they ain't really have no room to talk no shit to nobody. So I didn't realize what I didn't like about them in that same way. You know? So I'm torn here because I really want you to lose. Like I really want you to support
game theory, the right time. I was
I support hang up and listen. I support slow burn.
Why would you want that? Why would you want to see your friend suffer?
Just spent 10 minutes explaining why I want to see this happen.
Ain't got nothing to do with you. That's not personal. That's not personal. You're the one that decided to antagonize me because I hold my program to a higher standard. That's all.
I wanted to antagonize you because y'all's head coach got caught saying the N-word, and I just like not the current one. I just like seeing you try to figure out how you was gonna ride with that.
I mean, look, man, if I have a problem with everything racist, I ain't gonna do nothing in this country. I don't know. You think Al Copeland loved black people, man? I don't know. Maybe he did. I don't know. I mean, you think I'm a boycott Popeyes? No.
I just ask you this, though, because that game was wild, and you would acknowledge y'all caught the luckiest couple of breaks. And I ain't talking about that targeting thing because that didn't matter. But that dude catching that ball on the 1 yard line and then them fumbling, man. Woo!
We were ahead the whole game. We were ahead by three scores.
Y'all tried to give it back. Y'all tried hard to give it back. It was an incredible game. I just want to know, like, your booty had to be like iron fist, right?
I wish I didn't have a rooting interest in the game so I could have actually enjoyed it. But here's the thing. No matter what happened, if TCU had gone up by 30, 40 points, I still would have been terrified. I'm a Houston Oilers fan, man. Hearing about that Minnesota Vikings comeback was traumatic to me. So I would have never felt comfortable, but especially that game, because here's the thing, like a friend of mine who played, he's a linebacker at Notre Dame in the 90s. And he told me this the other day. He's like, well, the good thing about football is that you don't have to be the best team in the nation. You just have to be the best team in the stadium that day. And actually, I found out, Jimmy, that Lou Holtz said that, not you. So you took credit for that. But that was the thing. Like, I think if Michigan had to play TCU 10 times, they probably win 7 or 8. But the thing was that you're right. The breaks went their way some of the time. But also, like, can we just talk about the fact that, like, maybe Michigan was a little overrated. I mean, we're talking about a defense. Everybody kept talking about that defense. Like, man, they didn't shut down everybody. Bruh, they played 10 offenses ranked 73rd or worse in scoring offense this season. Like, I mean, look at who they were building their numbers against. So it's like the fact that people didn't believe that TCU could hang with them. I'm like, what are you basing it on? Michigan plays a two-game season. They play Penn State. They play Ohio State. And that's what we're supposed to be judging things on.
Well, they get a couple of tricky games to deal with, right? Like the Iowa game, especially if you're playing it there, is always a tricky game. You know what I mean? Like, you know how conference stuff goes. And there's and there's that somebody in Iowa, boy, what an amazing, like, everything about, wow, I'm sorry. But no, I think what you said was fair. I think part of what people were saying, and this is what I think is kind of an underrated part of this, you want to talk about some vindication for the Big 12.
Man.
Because that was the real reason that people didn't think they had a chance is that Michigan is Michigan and TCU is TCU, which is to say that you could reasonably presume that Michigan would be vastly superior at the line of scrimmage, right? Like, that's where the difference comes up between the tiers of schools is really what you got at the line of scrimmage. Right. That wasn't the case there. That wasn't it. You would expect that Michigan would have more depth, and that depth was tested coming in because the running back didn't even play, right? Their best player.
Yeah, Blake Corum.
He said over there with that like $250,000 piece around his neck. Did you see that?
Hey, man, NIL must be nice, bro. I did see that. So, now you can get it and flash it. You know, it needs to be like that.
He need to get a sturdier chain because that thing was begging to get snatched. I'm like, I don't think you boys understand the expensive jewelry rules.
I don't know if I want to fight nobody. I mean, Blake Corum about 5'10", probably about 2'0".
Nah, you can snatch and go. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, chain snatchers are not doing it and then standing there preparing to fight.
But then you got to run away. Then you got to try to run away from a – I mean, imagine your fortune. You got to run away from a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Fair,
you know?
Fair. Like, once you put it in those terms. I'm not saying it's wise, but I'm saying somebody
– somebody stupid would try it, though. Yes. That is fair. Yes.
Or somebody packing. Yeah. It just all depends. But no, I think, especially, and also with TCU, to be fair, they felt like the Minnesota Vikings of college football to an extent with all the one score games, right?
I can go with that. That's fair. Yeah, I TCU is not overly talented. They were not so much more talented than their competition that you could think they could overwhelm anybody. And they didn't. They didn't overwhelm anybody this season other than Oklahoma.
That stretch where everybody was overwhelming Oklahoma.
Right. But, you know, the thing was, too, is that game started out when Oklahoma had Dylan Gabriel at quarterback. So without Dylan Gabriel, OU is like a bottom tier group of five team. But with Dylan Gabriel, they were still pretty good and they still put it on them boys. But other than them and Iowa State, like, I couldn't look at anything and say, well, man, TCU is so good and they could dominate anybody. And that's. So it was reasonable for people to be like, hey, man, they've been getting away with it all season long, and that's going to catch up with them. But, you know, hey, man, that's why they play these games. That's why they play these games.
What you think about that Georgia thing, though? That game, that was an amazing game, too. And I think, like, that was a Ryan Day vindication game. Even if they did not win that, it was like, no, we are on the – like, Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama – really have been the schools they get the most, the three schools they get the players. Like, you know, Texas A&M's popped in and done a little something, but for years, those three had been a tier above everybody else. And if you're going to be Ohio State, you have to be competitive with Georgia. You have to be competitive when you play Alabama. Last time they played Alabama, they were not competitive. They were very competitive in this game, and good for you, Ryan Day. Georgia, man. How did they got so many, dog?
Yeah, I mean, people just coming out the AD Mitchell kid. I was like, I forgot about him. And then, you know, it's funny how a name sneaks up on you. Kenny McIntosh. Who the hell? You know, who is that? I was like, that dude cold. They've got three tight ends, although I think maybe Darnell, the 6'7", 270. Yeah, he may not play, which I don't wish injury on nobody. If TCU wins, I want them to win with Georgia full strength. But if you don't play, like, I won't be hurt about it. He's important. But yeah, man, they got dogs everywhere, bro. Every level of the field. And they're playing a different game. I mean, I know George Foster, whoever tried to be bullying me, you know, trying to want me to make me, you know, feel like I gotta, you know, kneel before the throne. And I'm like, look, man, that's great. You know, Georgia got a nice little program, man. Y'all just talking real big right now. Now you see my dilemma. They just talking real big right now. And I'm just like, you know, just would do y'all real good to be humble. Y'all got, you know, y'all got a 34-year-old accountant as your quarterback. Don't talk to us like we the kid, like we look like we kids right now. You know what I'm saying? TCU is in this game for a reason.
I will say this. I know we coming up on rap time here. Mm-hmm. Gary Patterson would not want to have to deal with 10 of the 11 guys on Georgia's offense. But I bet you Gary Patterson, that's a Gary Patterson game right there. Stetson Bennett, he's like, oh, food. I got something for that.
Food.
Watch this.
Right. Food. I mean,
you don't work there no more.
You know, but you know, Philip Montgomery, man, he did a really good job in the previous game. Those boys came to play. If you watched that game, you saw TCU. The defense, I mean, look, they gave up 45 points, but you cannot credibly say that they got dominated. I think after that opening run that Donovan Edwards had, they held Michigan to 3 yards a carry. This is allegedly the best offensive line, one of the best running games in the country, and TCU pretty much shut them down.
That game was sponsored by Coverage Bus on both sides. It was a whole lot of why is he by himself?
Yeah, man. It's just, I mean, this is how I think it, people, you know, we grew up in a different, you know, era of the game. It's just hard to defend these guys, man. At this level of football, you just have to understand that your team's going to give up 38 points, bro. It is nothing personal. You can still have a great defense, but you're going to give up 38 points. The issue is, can you get 39?
Yeah. You're right. So I think I'm going to be neutral. I don't think I'm a root against you.
Well, you know, I may have heard a little something about who you invited as your guest next Wednesday. And I see the disrespect, Bo.
Let me explain my logic. Okay. All right. I don't even know if she's accepted, but we invited L. Duncan to come on.
Y'all see that, people?
Listen. Here's my rationale. You're only fun if TCU wins. She'll be fun win or lose.
Fair enough.
That's the whole thing, right? Because if they lose, you're going to be back on your bullshit. I knew Sonny Dykes couldn't do it and da-da-da. And it would be things that I would find funny, but the audience would not.
But nothing that happens on Monday will change the way I feel about this season. Sonny Dykes has vindicated himself to me. You know what I'm saying? Not that he needed to do that, but I would be a fool to sit up here and argue against Sonny Dykes as the coach for the program right now.
I think you are. And with that in mind, that reminds me.
That was unnecessary. But that's
that fine. Reminds me. Rest in peace to Mike Leach. Sonny Dykes put the Mike Leach patch on the helmets. So I just want to say rest in peace to Mike Leach.
That is
Joel Anderson. Check him out at Slate. Check out Hang Up and Listen. He'd be working on the slow burns, all kinds of other stuff. He roots for the TCU Horned Frogs. He was the fastest 10-year-old in America. Joel, I appreciate you being on. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much.
I don't
for
like what you did there at the end.
On the right time.
I don't like what
this,
you did.
We do this three
right.
times a week. Parker Owens, Dan Stasic, Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow the right time. And thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out the right time with Bomani Jones podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The right time
with Bomani Jones.